Greetings, my friend. This is the brain of TV's Pinky in the Brain. You are listening to the Nerdcast, but what you're really listening to are subliminal messages saying, I will obey brain. Yes!
I knew it. I knew you were bluffing. I knew he was bluffing.
You're listening to the Nerdcast.
We're just like Kevin Bacon.
Smoke and mirrors, guys. Welcome to the movie factory.
Only on Project Nerd.
Anybody else want to negotiate?
Welcome to another episode of Nerdcast Recast. We have a very exciting show for you tonight. My name is Gallo, and I am the Darkest of Lords with Project Nerd. My co-host is...
Sarah Marie Spectrum. I am brand manager for Project Nerd and co-host of Con Moms, one of our newest podcasts.
And today, I am very excited because it's somebody that I've had... The one thing that I've noticed in life now is that nerd has gone from almost a bad word to one that describes passion for something. And when we do these types of podcasts, what we want to do is actually expose our fans to other nerddoms, as I like to call them. And one of my favorite nerddoms that I've actually been a part of for years too is the animal world. And today we have the host of YouTube's Emzotic, Emma Locke.
Hi, thank you.
Welcome,
so much,
Emma.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
We are so excited to have you. Seriously. I literally started browsing through your YouTube today and I was like, I'm so excited to watch all these videos. I now have a giant watch list. It's not like homework because I love animals, but I'm very excited. And as always, Nerdcast by Project Nerd is brought to you by Geek Garage. Head on over to geekgarage.com to see some of the world's coolest geek and pop culture themed vehicles, as well as to stay up to date on events and even register your nerdy car. That's geekgarage.com, geek-garage.com. And so starting off today, I get to do the first question. I'm so excited. I was like, yes. So I know you have tons of pets and you've worked with a variety of animals. And I am curious because I have pets as well. So I'm never going to make you pick your favorite, obviously. But what is a breed that you're very much attracted to? Like, what is your favorite breed of animal?
So this is going to sound really bizarre, but it's changed over the years. So for the longest time, I was obsessed with reptiles and I still am. And that's how I met Gallo because, you know, we've both been in the reptile world. But I was very fortunate almost 2 years ago to bring home my very first dog. And honestly, the kind of relationship that one can develop and the bond between a human and a dog, there's no other relationship that can really rival in my experience. So I'd have to say that dogs are a woman's best friend.
And Sarah, just so as you know, Kiba, correct?
Correct.
Is just the most amazing, cool, fun dog you will ever see or follow. And
so excited, if
we ever...
you guys.
And if we ever get to the point where we want to take all of these podcasts into video casts, Emma, if you would allow it, we'd love a show when we can see all of Kiba and his greatness.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, since you're on right now, Kiba, come here. What's this? Come on.
Watch this. Yeah. He's a
good boy. This is my boy.
There's Kiba. Yeah.
He's a big bear. Hi.
He is his own Dark Lord.
Oh, he is. Yeah. I call him a thundercloud.
Oh, he's so amazing. Pretty. He's beautiful too.
There we go. I just smushed his face with all the kisses because that's his favorite thing in the whole world.
Yes. And if you're listening to the audio version, he is a fluffy boy.
Oh, yes. He is. He's a boy.
He is fluffy. So, Emma, just for our fans, our guests, how would you do this? Who is Emma Locke?
Emma Locke is me. I actually, it's funny you say, who is Emma Locke? I have to really think about that. I don't actually go by Emma Locke that much these days. I tend to just go by M or Emzotic because those names just resonate so much more with me. And I'm a big believer that it's not what they call you, it's what you answer to. So I just decided I'm going to change what people call me. And I much prefer M because the only time I get called Emma is when I'm in trouble. So I prefer M. And who M is just an animal obsessed girl who has somehow managed to make an awesome career out of being a pet mom.
So now you are a pet mom to how many animals?
Right now I have 2 ferrets, 2 cockroaches, 2 snakes, a dog, and 3 geckos.
Oh my gosh. I'm sorry. I'm just like, I'm living vicariously through you right now. So
Oh, I mean, they're a real pleasure and a joy to look after. And I actually refined my animal family a couple of years ago, just because I felt, you know, with my platform, I was almost to an extent glamorizing having too many animals. That's not sustainable for a lot of people. So I decided to change that and to just scale back and keep little and keep well. So that's my message now to people, is to keep little and keep well.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, I would say that has been an evolution for myself as well, when kind of took a step back from the whole, you know, con style animal lifestyle and kind of started exploring other things that I appreciated and I liked. I saw that downsizing actually allowed me to love and care more, and was less about, you know, what I have and more or less about taking care of what I love.
Absolutely.
So, you know, we ended up with one ball python, one betta fish, one hedgehog, and three dogs. And we couldn't be happier. It's perfect. Perfect. It's the right size. There's enough hands here to help out with everything. And everybody has, you know, everybody has their part. And you see happy animals. You see healthy animals. Yeah. And I think that's huge.
It is. And that really is the key, that you have a nice balance where you have enough humans to look after the animals and you feel that the animals have a good standard of care. And ultimately, having a good standard of animal welfare in the home is my ultimate goal and message. Everybody is able, because of their own individual circumstances, to care for however many animals they can. And everyone's sort of threshold is different. You know, some people find it difficult looking after one animal, and some are very capable and have the resources to look after stables and staples of horses and all sorts of livestock, as well as reptiles in the home and birds, and huge collections of animals. So it really comes down to what each individual is capable of and has the resources for, which is very important.
So for me, since I am newly introduced to you and your platform, what was the first animal that you ever worked with?
So the very first animal that I worked with would have been small animals like hamsters and gerbils in a pet store, because I actually grew up in Hong Kong, though I was born in London, as you can tell from the accent. And I got my first job when I was 10 years old. And my job was to look after the livestock in a small pet store, which was across the road from my childhood home. And the owner of the store was so happy with my work that she put me in charge of essentially the entire store for hours after school. So I'd finish school and then go and become the manager at a pet store. And I worked with all kinds of small animals, a couple of birds as well, you know, parakeets, which were all the rage back in the 90s and early 2000s. And eventually from there, I got my next job, which was working as a dog trainer and rehabilitator when I was about 12 for the Hong Kong RSPCA, which is now just called the SPCA. But that was my second job. So really, it was small animals, birds and dogs, which are my early introduction to working with animals.
Excellent. Thank you for sharing. And sorry, what were you saying about resources?
I think that that's a part that's lost in a lot of these nerddoms. It's one thing to really like things. Mm-hmm. It's another thing to be prepared for what comes next. It's an investment of a lot of different things, your time, money, you know, just the way your lifestyle is. I think that a lot of times what happens is that's missed when people start wanting something and getting something, you know, like the bunny forever. And then now what, you know? So I've seen and followed you enough to know that care is a very big part of everything that you bring forward when it comes to the animals. Part of it, I'm sure, is from learning so young about the actual care of animals. You know, when you mentioned working at 10 and 12, most of us, you know, here in the States don't even consider working until legal age of 16. So you definitely got a very, very early start with that. If you had to do a mini checklist of what you would suggest to people who want to get an out of the ordinary pet, what would it be?
My advice would be to get a hands-on experience with that animal before you consider bringing them home. Because a lot of what people do today, it's what I do as well when I'm considering an animal, is they go to YouTube and they look at adorable videos of any animal they're thinking of bringing home. You know, you get so excited and wrapped up that you look for all the pros and the positives of bringing these animals home and cute videos on YouTube, whereas the reality can be very different. Case in point, I very much on impulse a few years ago bought an African pygmy hedgehog, and I didn't get hands-on experience with African pygmy hedgehogs before I did this. And it wasn't until I brought her home, I realized I was severely allergic to her spines. Ooh. Because hedgehogs anoint themselves with all sorts of different wonderful things, whether it's their food or feces or an interesting scent or liquid that they find on the floor. And that really irritated my very, very sensitive skin. Now, I did keep her for the whole of her life, but a lot of people would probably at that point go, you know what, I didn't realize I was going to be allergic, maybe this isn't the best idea for me. Then they rehome the animal, and as long as people rehome responsibly, I don't have an issue with that. But that can be avoided certainly by getting some hands-on experience with an animal, whether at somebody's house who already owns such an animal, or at a pet store, whether it's an exotic store or a rescue. It's always good to make an appointment at a time when these stores or rescues are not too busy, and just say, you know, I'm seriously considering this animal. I'd love to know the positives and the negatives. Show me what it's like to live just an hour or so with these animals. And sometimes you might change your mind as to wanting to bring that animal and commitment home.
That makes perfect sense. So now I want to ask you about an animal that probably isn't really very difficult to care for, but comes with some baggage, and they're adorable as can be. And I know you're a huge fan. I know I'm a huge fan, but the ferret.
Oh yeah.
You know, everybody, they are unbelievable. They are like the perfect mix of a cat and a dog put into something that is almost like a slinky, and they have tremendously awesome personalities, but they will provide an aroma that is very, can be to some people who aren't prepared for this, very offensive, kind of almost causing discomfort causing, might even want people not to come to their house because they themselves can't deal with it now, and everybody's attached. So Emma, what's your experience with ferrets?
Ferrets have to be one of my very favorite animals. I feel like if I were going to be an animal, I would be a ferret 100%. And I first started with ferrets back in the UK, where it's very common to use them for hunting. A lot of people, as a sport, will take their ferrets out and hunt what would be their natural prey in the wild, because they are domesticated from the European polecat, which eats rabbits and other small mice and voles and birds and whatnot. So a lot of people in the UK will take them out and hunt with them to catch rabbit. That's exactly what I did with mine. So I worked with hunting stock, essentially, as my introduction to ferrets. And also in the UK, a lot of people keep their ferrets outdoors in sheds, you know, like a little purpose-built huts for their ferrets, because, as you said correctly, there is a very, very pungent and very distasteful for many people smell that comes with a ferret. It's almost akin to when you're driving and you can smell a skunk has been hit. It's a bit like that, but a lot more dusty and musky. And some people do not appreciate that. And let me tell you, that smell does not come off. The more you wash a ferret, which you should only do maybe twice a year, the more they will smell, the more that they will secrete these oils, which promote that scent. And the more you do that, you also dry their skin. So if you are considering a ferret, it's a good idea to go to someone's house who has ferrets. Granted, as soon as you walk in, you will probably smell them. And if you don't, it's because the ferret owner is really on top of picking up every single piece of feces, cleaning out the enclosure daily, and washing the beds every couple of days, because that's what you have to do when you have ferrets. It's a huge commitment. However, if you are prepared for that, they're an incredible animal, which will not pine for you if you work long hours, but will always be ready to play when you do come home. And they do live a fairly decent life. You know, they can live about 7 or 8 years, roughly. I say roughly because in the US it's slightly different, with a lot of ferrets being Marshall's ferrets, which are a bit more inbred than in other places in the world. So they're perhaps not quite as healthy as other ferrets that you can find around the world, but they are still a wonderful animal. And I just find them thoroughly entertaining. And they're probably one of the contributing factors to the success of my YouTube channel. People love my two ferrets. They have so much personality, but they can also be very tricky. They're difficult to change over onto different foods, which are healthier for them. They can be nippy, meaning that they are happy to bite as kits or as babies. And again, that smell doesn't come off, but it will transfer. So if you hold a ferret, your clothes are going to hold on to that smell for until you wash those clothes. So certainly a wonderful pet for the right people. When done well, an absolute pleasure. But if you're not prepared and you're just looking for something that looks akin to a limousine cat, not for you, because you'll be sorely disappointed.
I've never heard of them put together as a limousine cat. That's amazing. And thank you for sharing, because like I've actually been looking into a ferret. We have cats currently. So that was my only hesitation. I wasn't sure how all that would work together. But I had never knew the history of them going like being treated for honey. Like, that's really interesting.
Yeah, ferrets do have a really fascinating history. They were originally domesticated to be a hunting animal to help people to hunt rabbits and small game. And they also have a surprising history because they were used by the aircraft manufacturer Boeing back, I think it was in the late 70s, to run cables throughout their aircraft all throughout the fuselage. To be able to you know, effectively get cables from one side of an aircraft to another.
So cool. Yeah. I'm going to be doing a lot of reading after this call. I feel like I'm going to be Googling a bit this evening. So
yeah, and they also were the reason why Prince Charles and Princess Diana's wedding was televised at the time to, I think it was 12 million people around the world, which was huge at the time. It was the biggest show ever televised around the world. And that was all thanks to ferrets running cables, multiple cables from one side of the church to another, or the cathedral rather, so people could watch these shows. I do believe Boeing retired from using ferrets, not only because of technology catching up and being a lot more reliable, but because ferrets are also very sleepy animals, sleeping 18 to 22 hours a day on average, falling asleep on the job.
Slackers. I'm kidding.
They love to sleep. And one of the things that I remember from my ferret, who graced us with his presence for about 5.5 years, if you had mentioned the lifespan here of our ferrets is a little shorter, but the way they sleep, I mean, they just don't care. They will be balled up, their heads will be hanging. You know, sometimes it's the heads up, the tails up, and the body's hanging, and they just don't care.
They don't. They look almost like fuzzy pretzels.
They're sleeping. They're so happy.
What got you into doing YouTube?
So that is actually, first of all, a little bit initially of a sad story.
Oh, where, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, but it's okay. It's totally fine. Actually, it's a good thing to talk about. So I had lost a pregnancy, which made me very, very, very sick. Essentially, I got blood poisoning from this miscarriage. And for about 3 months, I didn't realize that my blood was slowly being poisoned. And it resulted in me ending up in the hospital, almost in need of a blood transfusion and emergency surgery. And at the time, I had to stay in bed for a little while and take things a little bit easy. And I was thinking to myself, what am I doing with my life right now? What do I actually want to do? And what I had been doing, I was very fulfilled in my work as an animal educator. And by this point, I was in the UK in my mid-20s, and I was traveling around the UK, taking various exotic animals into schools, retirement homes, community centers, and giving educational presentations on them. And I just thought, how can I reach more people? Because I'm getting tired. I'm driving every day from 4 a.m. sometimes until 9 p.m. and giving all these shows. And it's actually, in hindsight, not that fair on my animals. So how can I still put my message out there and reach people, but not necessarily in the format that I'm doing now? And I thought, why don't I give YouTube a try? It's something I had wanted to do in the past, but my then ex-boyfriend didn't really want me to do YouTube. They thought it was a silly idea, so I'd never really pursued it. And I thought, now is the time. Now is the time for me to carve out my future and put my skill set to use, because I'd worked with animals, so I had animal knowledge. I'd worked as an actress, so I understand how to be on camera. I can script very well. and I am a decent editor. So I thought, why not? Let's give this a try. And it's almost like the universe just said to me, yes, that's exactly what you're supposed to be doing. Because YouTube is a difficult, difficult, hard slug for any YouTuber to get started. It's a miracle to get to even 1,000 subscribers. And somehow my videos about cockroaches and giant snails resonated with a community of animal lovers on YouTube who completely embraced me and were so wonderful that I literally overnight jumped from 1,000 subscribers to over 100,000 subscribers, literally in the space of a night, which was insane. And since then, I've just thrown myself fully into the pet industry, into trying to be a voice for modern pet care, and really being there for a wonderful community who I call my creature crew. So shout out to the creature crew if you're listening, and trying to help people feel like they have a safe place to learn about animals and to share their passion for pets.
I'm very excited to have you on the show, and I am looking forward, literally, I'm being honest, tonight I'm going to be watching a lot of your videos, and it's very exciting to find another like wholesome like place of the internet that's very bright, and you're a very warm person, I can tell that, and I'm really happy, and it's cool that we'll be able to learn that, and so many people have been able to benefit from your amazing videos. And yes, thank you for sharing with us.
Oh no, you are so welcome. And if I might make a suggestion, the spoiling my pet ferrets videos are phenomenal. You
will love starting with those.
Yes, if you want to see a whole room filled with packing peanuts and paddling pools filled with those balls that kids play with, you know, those colorful ball pit balls, that's the video that you want. It's a lot of fun.
I mean, I know how I am in a ball pit. I can't even imagine like ferrets in a ball pit. That makes me excited. So
it's like watching popcorn.
Emma, you work so hard. You are your brand. You have brought yourself to this point. So what other hobbies, interests outside of always working like most of us are, do you have?
That's a really good question, because I feel like everything always somehow comes back to animals. I recently moved to Colorado and I am learning to enjoy hiking, because I'm not the most athletic person, but I have been enjoying some hiking. I'm also really enjoying flying. So I'm hoping to go for my small aircraft pilot's license over the next couple of years. So actually this morning I was up over Boulder in Colorado, and that was wonderful, just learning how to spot different airplanes, because you'd be amazed up in the sky, there's a lot of traffic up there, and you have to have really good pilot's eyes to be able to see what's going on around you. And a lot of accidents in the air with small aircraft happen on clear skies, sunny skies and blue skies, like clear. So I was just sort of making sure that my eyes are sort of up to par for it. So I've been enjoying hiking, flying, and I'm really into art. I'm very artistic. I love to paint and draw and sculpt. And that really helps me to find a kind of a balance between what I do because I have to for my work and what I do just because I want to, which is also important. You know, work-life balance is important to me.
So Emma, with your recent experience with flying, I'm sure your headset can hear everything that's going on in a plane, correct?
Correct.
Okay, because I've been curious, it kind of came to me, when it comes to small aircraft, I figured that there wasn't just one at a time up in the air. How does that communication work? Is it between planes, or is there like a mini control tower somewhere, or how does that work?
Oh yeah, there's a ton of control towers everywhere. So it's not really like trucks where you can communicate with other aircraft, at least not in the aircrafts that I'm used to traveling in, which are very small aircraft that can stay up for, you know, just maybe a handful of hours before needing to refuel. But you're in constant contact with different air traffic control towers. Even in small towns, they often have them, and you have to request permission to travel through various airspaces. So you're constantly in contact with a lot of different people, and also in a small aircraft, just asking your passengers or your co-pilots to just scan the horizon, because like I said, there's a lot of traffic up there, and you can take your eyes off the horizon for you know, maybe 3 seconds, and all of a sudden, oh, there's a plane. So we have to dodge that. And not all aircrafts will have very up-to-date radio systems. So some of them don't even really show up that well on your radar. So if you're VFR, that means you have to be able to see where you're going. And a lot of the time in a small aircraft, you're VFR all the time.
Yeah, no, actually, I was very curious about that because I saw that you had been in a plane and I was like, okay, that is something that I could ask Emma now. I could ask Emma when we talk to her about the whole, you know, how does that communication work? You see them, they're not flying up as high as the big planes, but you always wonder, I'm like, do they just pull out of their driveway and hit the air? Or how much prep has to go into that? How much time has to go into that? Do you have to, you know, declare how full your tank is before you could even get on the runway? Those kinds of things. So we are definitely learning a lot today.
Sure. I mean, before you even get up in the air, you do have to fuel naturally, and you also have to do a very thorough safety check. And certain things can be overlooked. You know, if a certain light is out, then as long as your aircraft is over a certain amount of years or under a certain amount of years, it's still legal. If not, then it becomes illegal. And you also have to be able to plot your route. It's very important to do that. And back in the day, it would take sometimes hours to do that. You'd be looking up weather reports manually or calling in to ask if there's going to be, different, you know, pressures coming in, if there's going to be adverse weather, which in Colorado can change very quickly. One day you're 1 degree, the next you're 60 degrees. And that used to have to take hours, whereas now you can do it all on various apps and it can take, you know, not so long, maybe, you know, 10 minutes to 30 minutes. But you do have to be able to plot your route and to understand that you're going to have to be on certain radio frequencies to be able to communicate with different air towers to be able to request, you know, that you can pass safely through their airspace. And if not, then you have to have another route in mind as well. So you have to be really on the ball with that. It's very, very fascinating to me. I'm still very early on in learning about aircraft, but certainly learning very willingly because it is fascinating. Aviation in general is something that I'm quite interested in, as well as maritime affairs.
And in typical M fashion, why ride when you can drive, right? So M, you have developed a huge following with young pet enthusiasts, and that has always been things that you were never too big to talk to anyone about your passion, about what you love, about what you want people to understand and learn. There's one thing to teach and there's another thing to tell. And by following you, I've always have seen and felt like Sarah mentioned, that warmness of somebody who's trying to teach and not someone who says, and I've noticed this a lot in the reptile community, is that there comes a point where there's a big rift between those who know and those who want to know. Like somebody will say, you know, they'll want to fascinate you with the fact that they know the Latin terms for animals that you don't know, and they pride themselves in letting you know that they know that. And I think that turns a lot of people off. And it also, what I think it does is opens a lot of people for accepting misinformation, because, you know, the people that do know and do have the knowledge don't want to teach them. How are you able to do that? What sparked the willingness to teach?
That's actually a really great question. And I don't think it's one that anyone's ever asked me before. So thank you for that. I think a lot of it comes down to my experience as a student. I was not particularly gifted in a classroom. I know certain subjects very well, but if you put me in a mathematics class, I am so lost. And growing up in Hong Kong, an Asian woman who can't do mathematics, like, what is wrong with you? And that's literally how my teachers would speak to me. And I would get so shy to ask questions because I would get sent out of class. Or literally, I remember one teacher, I plucked up all the courage in the world to raise my hand. I was in a set that I shouldn't have been in. It was way over my head. I didn't understand. And I just said, Miss, I don't understand. Could you please explain to me? And she looked me in the eye and just said, are you stupid or something? And ever since that day, I've always told myself, for a long time rather, I told myself that I just shouldn't ask questions because it makes me look silly. It makes me look dumb and I should know the answer. But ultimately, nobody is born with infinite knowledge. And there's a great quote out there that if you allow, if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it will live its whole life thinking that it's stupid. And that's not true. We all have gifts. And for me, I want to help nurture the gift that people have, which is an interest in the natural world and animals. And what a wonderful, interesting gift that is, because animals are there for everyone. You don't have to be rich. You don't have to be poor. You don't have to be a certain color or orientation to enjoy animals. They're for everyone. And animals love us unconditionally. And there's a lot we can learn from them as well in terms of just tolerance and peace and community. So really, when I got started in the reptile world, that brought back a lot of negativity for me, because I find, at least back then, that a lot of the people I knew, like you said, Gallo, were very much into the ego behind why they keep the animals. Look how smart I am. I can breed this animal. I know the Latin word for this, and I'm going to use it because I know you don't know the word, and it's going to make me look more intelligent. But you don't knock the crown off somebody else's head to make yours look more shiny. Mm-hmm. And I find that people are just in general a lot happier, and I'm a lot happier in helping other people. So not only is it about sharing the passion, but also with encouraging people to feel good in themselves. They should feel good in themselves. They should be supported, and learning is a process that we are always going through. So I just want to be able to give people a safe space to learn about animals and to not feel like they're being dictated or looked down on, but encouraged. And there's another great quote, which is that as you teach, you learn. And I feel that. And my animal care has never been as good as it is now because of my community. My community give me feedback. I want feedback. I want constructive criticism. And if they say to me, you know, I'm not sure about this bedding or this diet, I'm going to research it. I don't know everything. I'm always learning and always evolving my animal care. And a lot of that does come from the feedback from my community. So it's a two-way thing. They show up for me, I show up for them, and I teach them and they teach me.
I've always said, like, if someone says they can't learn anything anymore, you should run very far away from them. Like, very far away, because they're not open to new ideas or anything. This is kind of bouncing off of this question. So for anyone that's never had a pet before, and I'm sure you have a video on this, and you guys check out her videos, because I'm sure she has tons of knowledge on there, okay? But for a quick synopsis, what would you suggest as someone who's looking at a pet for the first time?
Another good question. I think you have to look at your lifestyle, whether you're home a lot, whether you're able to afford not just the initial cost of a pet, but the ongoing costs as well. When you buy a dog, or if you just get a dog from a rescue, it might not necessarily be that much in terms of purchase price. Then you've got the ongoing feeding costs, vet bills, bedding, walkers or sitters if your dog can't stay home alone and it needs a walk during the day while you're out. So looking at ongoing finances as well is very important, and creating a plan for that, as well as what you actually want from a pet. Now, that might sound kind of selfish, you know, like, oh, you shouldn't just be thinking what you want from a pet, but ultimately that's why animals get rehomed, because they're not always fulfilling what the human who purchased them or rescued them wanted. So if you're looking for companionship, a tarantula is not going to give you that. If you're looking for a wonderful display animal that is going to creep your friends out, then yes, by all means, get a Goliath bird eater, but it's not going to want to cuddle with you. So if you're looking for a cuddly animal, even though it's a furry, small furry creature, a Goliath bird eater is not for you. So you really have to assess what you want from an animal and be very honest about it, because you'll save yourself a lot of time and expense and also animal heartbreak as well if you have to give the animal up. Lifestyle, as well as who you share your space with or who you intend to share your space with. Now, when I first brought home my puppy, Kiba, who's now almost two, I was living in a house with three children. And so it was very important to me that the dog that I bring into the house is good with children. So I thoroughly researched and I waited for a long time on the right wait list for the right dog for me. And I didn't regret my choice whatsoever. So planning is essential.
That was a real good answer to anybody who wants to bring in something living that isn't a human into a home, because you are going to, like in everything else, you are going to disrupt the chemistry because everybody's used to doing things a specific way. And the same thing here, you know, we had small children, then we had teenage age children, then, you know, now I have a college student who only visits occasionally, and, you know, the boys are into other things. And then you almost had to know that the responsibility for a lot of these things was going to come back to you. You know, it's fun for them, it's interesting for them, and you want to teach them, but the best way to teach them is just to show them how you care for these animals. You know, they'll never see how much behind the scenes work took into raising them, because they're, you want them in the moment. You don't want them constantly reflecting, even though their upbringing and everything else, but they show that mostly out of the house. When other people are telling you that they love your kids and they want your kids over at their house whenever they can because they're so nice and everything else, that's the reflection of your work and your commitment to them. But now for them to see what it takes, animals are great for that, because I get to take care of it. Like Emma, like you mentioned, you know, we have three rescue dogs. The actual dogs cost us next to nothing.
Right.
But yes, that's three trips to the vet. That's, you know, three different walks. It's three different times to let them out individually. They all kind of have their schedules. So it's not like you can force them to all go out at the same time. You know, my littlest one just loves waking me up at 5:30 in the morning. My oldest one will not go out till after she's eaten. You know, I'm tired and it's hard and, you know, but I know the schedule. So, you know, you disrupt the chemistry, but then what they bring is amazing. It brings out so much better in people who really commit themselves to caring for animals, you know. And it's not like the old school way, Emma, you know, quote unquote, it's just a dog, it's still a dog, you know. And it's like, does that mean that, you know, there's a level of cruelty that's acceptable just because it's an animal? And something that my dad was old school, you know, but through my experiences, and I'll admit some of my failings with animals, I have learned to get to where I'm at now. Mm-hmm. One of my biggest failures that will never occur again was totally an impulse thing versus anything else, was a chinchilla. I mean, you have to be a very committed person to care for a chinchilla. And I was, you know, I was just not there. And it was just, to me, it was almost impossible. You know, and I almost feel like at points I would avoid doing the things I needed to do just to get past it. I'll do it tomorrow. You know, the dry baths and the shedding. And I couldn't even socialize the chinchilla because it was so difficult to do that I just didn't. It almost became a display animal, which kind of made me sad. So have you, in your experience, have a story like that sticks with you as to, man, that was one hell of a learning experience with this animal?
A lot of animals have been a learning experience. Probably none so much as the skunks that I used to have up until just over a year ago. Skunks are one of my favorite animals. And actually, I was living with a person, this was my prior relationship, someone who wanted to keep skunks for the purpose of displaying as educational animals. Now, the amount of work that goes into skunks is astronomical. I'd worked with skunks in the past, so I thought, hey, I'm well equipped to do this. I've worked with, you know, about 12 skunks, but I never had them in my home. And I didn't have to think about litter training them because all of them had enclosures, exhibit setups where I would go in every day and just clean up after them. But actually litter training a skunk, getting them used to being in a home, ensuring that the house is skunk proofed, which is not easy to do because they are wonderful climbers and diggers, and they don't have a homing instinct. So if they get out, they're not coming back the way that a cat might. That was a huge learning curve for me. And even though they weren't technically mine, hence why I don't have them now, the care load was often on my shoulders, and it was not something that I enjoyed. I enjoyed the animals and I made sure that they were well cared for, but there was always a little bit of resentment, not for the animal, but that the care was passed on to me, and it was so burdensome at times because the smell would be horrendous in the summer in this small house with two skunks, which I didn't actually want myself, but, you know, ended up having to look after, and having to prepare very intricate diets because skunks are prone to obesity and diabetes. They need taurine in their diets. You need to add a lot of different things and balance their food just right. That took a lot of time. Caring for two skunks took up more time than caring for all of the birds, which some of which were carnivorous, all of the birds, all of the reptiles, all of the amphibians that I had at the time. It took up more time than all of them combined. So yes, I don't recommend skunks as pets.
That's fantastic. Thank you. That is something that, you know, somebody might think of, you know, it's an exotic pet. Yes, let's do it. You know, and then it's
and they're
like,
really cute. Oh, well, but
first, before you do that, listen to our recast with them and be sure because there will be some information in there for you. The $1 million question. What's next for M and Mzotic?
That's a really good and interesting question because that's constantly changing. You know, the life of a YouTuber who's full time is it's very different per YouTuber. So for me, I'm not just creating videos. I'm also a published author. I wrote a number one bestseller, which was called Animal Kind, which I released last year during the first week of Corona. And I mean, it was like just a whirlwind. It just sold out. It was wonderful. And I was so grateful for that. So that was one project. And I'd like to write another book as a follow-up to Animal Kind. I am also talking to a couple of different TV networks who are interested, again, after Corona, in perhaps doing a sort of TV show with me. So that's really exciting. I'm also working on something that I'm very passionate about, which is pet products. So the more I'm in not just the reptile world, but the actual pet industry and seeing how lucrative it is, but also how much room there is for animal products to improve with better standards and people wanting more for their animals, which in many cases now for millennials such as myself are replacement kids because we just can't afford kids. So we get dogs. And
my cat is basically my child. I literally researched and was like, okay, I'm financially in a good place. Like, I'm like, this is my baby now. So exactly. I get it.
So you are essentially the audience that I'd be catering for. And I'd like to create products that do good things and also spark joy. So things that humans can enjoy with their animals and also with a good cause. Being somebody who is a very proud survivor of domestic violence, I would like every sale from my future products to have a percentage going back to perhaps funding shelters for those who are fleeing domestic violence but fear that they can't leave because they don't want to leave their pets behind. And there are very precious few centers in the United States where someone can flee with their pet. I think there's only one locally to me now, which is absurd because this, you know, Colorado is a huge state. And I don't think it's even in Colorado. It's in one of the neighboring states. It's one place that people can go if they're in dire need of shelter that they can take their pets. And that's a huge reason why a lot of people stay, because they don't know what will happen to their animals if they leave them behind. So I'd like to spread joy, create products, do well with that, and then eventually help to fund centers for people who are fleeing domestic violence, as well as just perhaps giving back to charities, because I myself benefited from a charity who helped me understand legally where I stood with my case. I didn't know anything about being in court or talking about domestic violence to a judge. So that was something that I definitely took away with me and thought, I'm going to pay this forward one day. So in short, I would like to create my videos. I would like to collaborate more with people and other creators to create crossover content that more fandoms can enjoy. I'd like to create animal products, and I'd like to create art as well. That's what I love. So there's so many things on the horizon and the TV show thing.
How about animal cosplay?
Oh my gosh.
I mean, how amazing would those photo shoots be?
Animal cosplay would be awesome. I actually, you might remember from my Facebook a long time ago, since you have access to like my private Facebook, I have a lot of kigurumis, which are onesies that are animal themed. So I very frequently will dress up like a fox or a bat or a badger or a hedgehog and just like run around the house, because you know what 32-year-old doesn't want to run around the house, you know, just enjoying ring pops and drinking Gatorade, but like dressed as a hedgehog.
This millennial does with you. I have onesies that I totally wear around the house, even for my Zoom meetings for work. Uh-huh. Yeah, totally.
Those are the best. They're so cozy. Oh, yeah.
Very cozy.
Yeah, maybe I'll make my own line of kikaroo.
Yeah, you got to bring.
I look forward to buying them.
You got to bring back the onesies. You got to bring back the onesies, Em. I remember they were fun. They were cool. They inspire. You know, it's like, who doesn't want to throw it on and run around, you know?
Oh, exactly. They just make you want to dance. You know, sometimes when I'm doing housework, I'll have ferrets just dancing around my feet, attacking my vacuum cleaner while I'm dressed as a hedgehog. And it's absurd. And most people would be like, oh, she needs to go to an asylum. But no, I'm just happy and I'm cool with that.
Life goals, though. Life goals.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I've embraced the most authentic self that I am. And that's myself as M/Emzotic, with an amazing community of animal and pet lovers and just, you know, pet community and the pet nerddom, I suppose, as you would call it. And I totally want to be pet parent goals. Like that's the goal.
So Sarah, do you have any more questions for M?
Well, I feel like we're getting near the end. So like, I would say, what is one piece of parting wisdom you would give to your people that are watching and the new people that are watching from our side?
I would say that life is to be enjoyed, not endured. And if there's anything that we've learned from this last year, it's that nothing is certain. Mm-hmm. And it's really important to be able to evolve and adapt. And part of that, I think, comes with just being a bit of a risk taker as well, calculated risks. But if you're interested in starting a YouTube channel, but you've just thought, you know, I've missed the boat, or I'm too old, or I'm too technologically inept, just go for it. Just start. You know, it's you're going to get people in every aspect of life, whether you're doing a 9-to-5 or you're employed or you're self-employed, you're going to get people doubting you no matter what. And you've only really got yourself. So it's a good idea just to do what is authentic to you and makes you happy, because, you know, we don't know how life's going to be 10 years from now, or if Corona is going to change the shape of how we communicate with people forevermore. We just don't know that. So just take a chance and do what, you know, find what makes you happy and just be a kind person. I think the world needs people to be more kind. So you can take what you do seriously, but don't have to take yourself seriously. And I promise you'll always feel 100 times better for spreading positivity and clapping for others, even when things aren't always going so great for yourself. And people remember that. And your vibe really does attract your tribe. And you can definitely kind of like raise your vibration there and find, you know, a better circumstance for you. Like, you don't have to be beholden to what you have been in the past or your circumstances in the past. I don't think of myself as a victim of domestic violence now. It helped to shape me into someone a lot more strong and a lot more empathetic and a lot more driven to never be that same person who was taken advantage of like that again. So try and find the positives and don't take life too seriously, because none of us get out alive anyway.
Yes, we all die at the end.
I know, on that uplifting note.
Make it a fun ride, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
For all our followers and fans who are now going to become your followers and fans, how do people access M and Emzotic?
Oh, that's super easy. So I'm very easily able to be found on YouTube. You can just type in Emzotic, which is E-M-Z-O-T-I-C, and all my videos will come up. So you can subscribe if you want to. And then again, Emzotic Official, all one word, on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat. I'm pretty much everywhere. You can always find me. And I try to upload every single day on Instagram. I share a lot of stories behind the scenes of what it's like to live around this many awesome animals, flying adventures, sharing my deepest thoughts at really random times of the day as well. I've normally got new posts up all the time. So feel free to come along and become part of the Creature Crew. You know, we're a really varied bunch, but we all love animals and we're all here for animal welfare. So yeah, come and join us.
Yay.
Thank you so much, Em.
TikTok. So excited. Find you on TikTok.
That's so great. And thank you both so much for having me on. It's been a real pleasure.
Yes, thank you so much. We really enjoyed having you.
And thank you again. You were able to fit us in, and we are very, very, very happy to have had you as our guest. like I said, we just want to bring people in and show that these communities can come together and can create something even bigger and brighter, where the acceptance is, you know, truly the key. And you have helped us do that in taking us to the animal world, where a lot of us are, you know, in other different areas. And oh, one more thing. Favorite movie.
Oh, favorite movie of all time or just like right now?
All time.
Actually, Avatar is my favorite, because I know a lot of people say it's Pocahontas in outer space, but number one, the visuals are awesome. And number two, it's got a great message about being harmonious with the planet around you and the animals, and that if we're not, it ultimately leads to our own self-destruction. So I really love the message behind Avatar. I wish I could be like a 9 foot tall, slender, blue cat humanoid thing.
That's awesome. All right, well, thank you everybody for joining us. This has been the podcast recast with our very special guest, M from Mzotic. You could find her on YouTube. And as always, you can find all of our podcasts at the Project Nerd Podcast Network. That's project-nerd.com. Come join us there. Follow us, and we'll be bringing you more awesome content throughout. And thank you once again, M. It was a pleasure.
Take care,
everybody. Bye-bye.
Hey, Pro Nerds, thanks for listening to the podcast. If you like the Nerdcast and other amazing Project Nerd podcasts, please go give us a subscription, a like, a review, wherever you find us, as we need your love and support to continue making awesome content. Next week, we'll be back with another great episode of Nerdcast, as well as other original Project Nerd podcasts.